Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Hi, welcome to this week's edition of Blues Talk again. John, Dave, and myself are going to look back over Leinster's victory against Ulster last weekend, review all your Pro 14 action, and have a bit of a discussion about some things that's happening in rugby, because there's no matches next weekend as the European Cup games have been postponed. So, lads, a 24-12 win against Ulster. The world was righted, and everything's back good again in the universe.
Yes, we were absolute shit last week, and now this week we're kings of the world again. Now, that's the way in sport. I think I said it to you a few times, and I'm sure half the world has said it at this stage, but it was the closest game I've ever seen that was 4-0 in my life. Ulster wouldn't lay down, and they never scored a try, but they kept trying to score a try. But yeah, it was good to get back to winning ways. A 26 game winning streak in the league. Good, you know, I'm sure that is a record. I'm guessing it is. That will be hard to equal, because it's, you know, that's more than a season, which is pretty impressive. But we weren't perfect. I'm sure we'll get to our line out falling apart all the time. But we were gritty, and we needed to be after the previous week when we were out gritted by Connacht. Good to see it back to winning ways.
We're not quite where we were, but we're coming. We're building. It's improving. There's certainly an improvement on Connacht. You can see we're still that little maybe half beat off. In terms of our timing and stuff like that, but that'll come back, especially when you consider it was quite an avant-garde selection with Ross Byrne as 13, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But you know, important players came back and got good game time. We had the issue with the line out, but overall, particularly in the second half, you could see they came out and they just upped the pace. We've said it before, Leinster have often done this. We just upped the pace to a level that Ulster were unable to really compete at. And then we scored our tries, and that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. But Go on, John. Well, even at 3-0, 17-12 was a bit of a scary place to be at that point before we got our fourth try. Like, it's a one-score game. Even though we're outscoring them 3-0, it was, you see games and go, oh, I was never in doubt. I had a bit of doubt in the back of my head that we would pull it off.
We kept making silly mistakes, particularly in terms of discipline, in the wrong areas of the pitch. It's all right. Sometimes a penalty can be a good penalty to give away, but we were giving away bad penalties and Ulster were kicking them. And we weren't, for whatever reason. So, you know, you're right, John. I mean, at 17-12, the game was still very much live. But remember that, you know, we had lifted our pace at that stage. We'd taken that game on, and Ulster didn't really make a huge impression in the second half. Most of their good work was in the first half.
True. I have to say, when I was watching the match, I just didn't feel once Ulster were in any way capable of scoring a try against us. We won the second half 19-3. They were only winning 9-5 at half time. Johnny Sexton coming back in, and his radar was off, and probably should have given over the kicking reins a little bit sooner to Ross Byrne. But like you were talking about, Leinster kind of been off that beat. We made 13 changes from the team that played against Connacht. The entire pack was changed. Like, obviously, Johnny Sexton and Dave Kearney were the only two players to start both games. So like, if you're constantly chopping and changing selections as Leinster have been, especially over Christmas, it's only natural that they're not going to be been able to just snap back in and you know, be that well-oiled machine. But I have to say, like, I'm surprised John said that never looked at that, or thought it was scary at, you know, whatever the scoreline was, 17 to 12. I have to say, I never thought Ulster looked in any shape or form like scoring a try. The only time that I was in any way worried was that in the last 5 minutes when we held them out in our 22, we didn't give away a penalty and we just tackled because they would have got a losing bonus point if they had scored. But I just thought they were quite toothless, really.
There are a couple of things to say to that. I agree with what you say about all the changes can be disruptive. But when Leinster are playing well, that doesn't make any difference whatsoever. Leinster just changed the team, you know, almost on an entire basis and nothing changes. That's when Leinster are playing well. That's how you know that we're still that little bit off. In terms of scoring tries, maybe they didn't look like scoring a try, but you don't need to score tries to win matches. You just need to score more points than the opposition. And we were giving away penalties. And we weren't taking penalties we were getting. And the other thing is, we were without, from the 55th minute on, we lost six out of eight lineouts.
Yeah, once Cronin went off.
If you keep giving away that amount of possession, you're going to find yourself, eventually you're going to run out of defenders. We didn't. Correct. The clock beat them to it. But if you keep giving away that amount of possession, a hole will eventually appear.
Mm. Really, giving you an example of, if you look at the end of the first half, they had one of their talisman Sinbind, if not the talisman of the team, Sinbind, and we came out of that Sinbind period with 6 points to the bad through penalties. We had been ahead and we went behind. So at 17-12, in the back of my head was, we could easily get another 6 points, which would have been enough to win the game. Now, I'm not saying I thought, oh, we're definitely going to lose this. I didn't think that at all. I felt we were going to win, but I wasn't going, oh, we have this in our bag. This is a piece of piss. You know what I mean? I felt that we weren't safe at 5 points ahead. Once the fourth try went in, grand. I didn't think we were in any danger then. But at 17-12 for a little while, with what was it, 10 minutes to go or something? You know, I just thought back to the first half and went, this could go again. This, you know, just a bit of indiscipline. The wrong shit happens. It could implode on us. And thankfully it didn't. And as I said, I wasn't there shitting myself thinking we're going to lose this, but I was certainly had a thing in the back of my head going, this could go pear-shaped yet.
The you weren't shitting yourself, but was there a bit of a turtle head, John?
there's a couple of interesting selections. It was great to see Jordan Lammer back on the pitch after his injury. When was it, last October, November? He seemed to come back a little bit ahead of schedule. I'm not sure if it was the quality of ball that was been put up to him, but he certainly diffused a lot of the high kicks that were coming his direction, you know, which was great to see, because obviously when we saw him playing fullback in the Six Nations games, he did look a little bit suspect under those games. Saracens also, I think, put a few up against him in that match in the quarterfinal. But he looked very comfortable under them, so maybe he used a bit of his downtime to get a little bit more practice under those high balls.
Yeah, it was a little bit
less under pressure on the wing than he would have been at fullback. Although it has to be said, I mean, he deserves kudos because they have big hopes for Blaine McElroy up there, and I thought Larmer coped with him very, very well. Yeah, it was a good return. We saw his feet in action a couple of times, you know, to get himself out of situations. If he can get a bit of space, and maybe our passing is a bit sharper, he looks like he's coming back into a bit of coming back and coming back in form.
Yep, absolutely. You picked the Six Nations and Saracens. Like both of them, England and Saracens have a lot of common players. The guy putting up the bombs in Farrell and a lot of the guys chasing the bombs. They're
exactly. But I think like the natural selection, you know, in those two games, Leinster and Ireland had played him at fullback, and they put Hugo Keenan on the wing. That's kind of been reversed now. Keenan's come into his own at fullback, and I think, you know, personally speaking, I think that's a better mix or better fit for both Ireland and Leinster is to have those two lads currently where they were on Friday night.
Well, I wouldn't like to be, I mean, in a positive way, I wouldn't like to be Andy Farrell trying to pick his back three.
If you want to get
a lot of players available to him, and a lot of whom are kind of in form.
If you want to get Stockdale and Lowe into the same back line, I think that's probably why we're putting Stockdale at full back. Do you put one in each wing with Keenan at full back? Does Larmer get his way? You know, like you say, it's a bit of a headache. But having headaches like that are kind of allows you the luxury of picking.
And you are, of course, getting the form wing in Ireland for the last 12 months.
Well, yeah, I was going to come on to him. Myself, a few other lads have a little side wager with Dave Carney Bingo. And, you know, you kind of select a minute that he's going to score a try. And he's played 9 games in total so far this season for Leinster, and he scored 7 tries in those. Last season, he played 13 games for Leinster and scored 12 tries. You know, we said it quite a few times, if he was an unknown and had that scoring record and was coming in, he would be immediately been talked up as this new sensational winger that has to play for Ireland. But because he's Dave Carney and because he probably got a little bit of negative press from certain sections because, let's face it, he might have been coming up against an incumbent in Munster, he's kind of talked down a little bit. You know, but his scoring record is sensational. So like in the total games that he's played, over the last season and a half, he's played 22 matches and scored 19 tries. Now, that's a phenomenal strike rate.
Absolutely.
His finish at the weekend was the finish of a man in absolute tip-top form. It really was. Yeah. That was a finisher at the height of his powers.
Yeah. He had a lot to do. It didn't look as impressive as it probably was. Well, maybe it did to a lot of people, but it just... In terms of how much ground he had to cover, it wasn't very impressive. But in terms of how he had to get the ball down in absolutely limited space, it was stupendous. Like it was excellent bit of wind.
And the way he
man loves a meat pie.
He lifted his left leg as he was going over the line, so as not to be dragged, to drag into touch.
Yep.
Yeah, great awareness of his body to know exactly what, you know, needed to be done and where he was positionally on the pitch. What did you think of Ross Byrne starting at 13?
It was an odd one, obviously. Did he play at 13? No, he seemed to be playing at 12. Some people were...
He played at 12, 10 and 13, I think.
Some people were reckoning maybe it was a bit of a left and right centre thing that the French used to do and English used to do way back.
Ulster always used to do that.
Carling and Guskett, I think, used to do it. And the French, quite a lot of centre combinations for France used to do that left and right. Didn't matter which way they lined up. One was always left and one was always right. I'm not sure that that's true, that that's what they did. I think he was more, when Sexton was playing out of and he wasn't coming into line, I think he was more at 12. Robbie Henshaw would have an awful lot more experience defending at 13, for example. So... When they were in defence, I wasn't there, so I can't tell you exactly. You don't see that kind of thing on TV, but I would guess that he lined up at 12 defensively pretty much all of the time. But yeah, it was, you know, you had to put a number on his back. You had to get him on the field. So
it's one of those.
Put 13. Give everybody a laugh.
It's one of those that after one game, all you can say is it didn't not work. And there was stuff about it that was promising. I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, this is the thing that teams have been trying to do in various different ways, whether it's fullback or an inside center or whatever, is get a second playmaker on the pitch so that they can, you know, have a playmaker further out. So what you saw was Leinster kind of playing with their, we see forwards do it, and Leinster were playing with their backs into kind of two pods. With a pivot in each one. You had Johnny Sexton on one side and you had Ross Byrne on the other, and guys playing off them. It was the first outing, whether it was a matter of necessity or something that they're genuinely trying out, it's hard to know. There were moments when it actually clicked quite well, but there are moments when it didn't.
Yeah, look, it was a case of having to put the players you had on the pitch. Like, you know, there's a lot, between COVID and injuries, there's a lot of...
We were a bit skinny in the backs, all right, weren't we?
Big time.
Although we did, in terms of that, we did have Jimmy O'Brien on the bench. So I mean, if we were stuck for an outside centre, he's an outside centre, you know, kind of that kind of thing. So I'd say it was an experiment, and I'd say it's one they might revisit. I'm not sure they'll revisit on Saturday week, but I'd say it's one they might revisit.
Yeah. For sure.
We saw the return of Sean Cronin as well last weekend, and you mentioned it earlier. The 55 minutes that he was on seemed to correspond with the 55 minutes that the lineout worked.
Yeah.
Not sure if there's a coincidence or not, but great to see him back on the pitch, though.
Great to see him back on the pitch, and he's a fantastic player and so dynamic. I don't want to be too harsh about hookers thrown in, because most of the time, if a line-out's failing, it's not the fault of any one player. There's so many moving parts in a line-out. I do think, however, looking at the game, has Tracy got the yips?
Maybe.
Sometimes it happens. Yeah. I mean, it happens to hookers, even to the best of them. I mean, Jerry Flannery has had nightmares out of touch. You know, it happens to the very best. Maybe it's just something he has to play his way through.
Well, look, there's a few things.
It must be said that he did recover for the last couple of lineouts, and threw well for the last couple, and not safe balls to two. I mean, was it it was a longer ball that we scored our fourth try off, if memory serves. So you know, you have to give the guy credit for his intestinal fortitude.
Fair enough. It must be difficult for. Must be difficult for somebody like him, though, knowing that he's probably not, or, you know, he was kind of pushing for a period of time to be the number one hooker in the team. And then you've got two kind of kids coming through, Kelleher and Shanahan, you know, which is kind of the new shiny thing. And then you've Cronin coming back. So he doesn't know whether he's fighting for a starting place in the Heineken Cup matches, or bench, or even, you know, is he going to be on the bench for a big Pro 14 game? So it's hard, you know, just from a mental point of view, it must be quite hard.
You've also got the fact that Tracy, for example, was a loose head prop all the way up and switched to hooker in the academy. As far as I know, Sheen has always been a hooker, and he seems to have a good throw on him. Kelleher, I think, has been, I'm not sure, to be honest, I think he's been a hooker. But like, you get different skills out of them. Like, Sean Cronin and Kelleher are fabulous around the park. Sheen and Tracy are big, huge lads who are going to add ballast to your, you know, Sheen has good hands too. It's a different thing. I would guess that, James Tracy would possibly give you a bit more in the scrum, because he got that extra bit of bulk, bit of ballast. And Dan Sheehan, now that he seems to give you more, he has that angle because he's a bit taller. He might give you a bit more throwing in. And he's had a bit of learning to do to get the scrum side of it going. But once he gets the scrum side of it going, unless you get some little lad getting right in underneath him because he's so tall at 6'3", He's got so much ballast to put down. You know, that's going to make a very strong front row with him in it, or Tracy. You know, so
I would say, John, that you as someone who has pumped iron, would know that size isn't power.
Of course, technique is huge. As someone who lost the Leinster under whatever it was discus thrower to a guy who was much, much smaller, but had amazing technique. It was actually, I'll digress for about 30 seconds. There was a guy who won the shot put at the same, I was in both, and there was a guy who won the shot put, and he was huge. He'd no technique, but he was so big, he was able to put the shot anywhere he wanted, at that level, obviously. And the guy who won the discus was little farty guy. He was like a back, and he could just spin around. And the discus would fly because he had fabulous technique. The same guy who won the shot, he couldn't throw the discus more than, you know, he just couldn't get it to fly from at all because he had zero technique. He was all power. So similarly, as I'll lead back to your point there, you know, it's technique is a huge part of it in scrummaging, for example. You know, in lots of things, you can be huge, but not be able to put the power down. Yeah, so I agree with your point. But there are times, you know, the other saying is a good big one will always beat a good little one. So if they're both equally good at the technique, the big guy's going to win. So
yeah, well, and
at the professional level, you know, everybody has pretty good technique generally. It's not the under 15 discus throwing championship anymore.
So that win anyway kind of brings us back into contention in the standings. We are now on 41 points with 8 wins from 9. Ulster 5 points ahead of us and 46 from 10 wins from 11. We still have our 2 games in hand. Obviously, we mentioned at the start that the European Cup games are going to be suspended, possibly those 2 rounds cancelled. But the Pro 14 have decided to play the postponed Stevens' Day game, Munster Leinster down from Tone Park on Saturday week, which, you know, good use of that weekend. So the lads have a weekend off or week off, and then they have a big Interpro that hopefully both sides will be pretty much full strength with going in then as kind of almost a final trial for the Six Nations.
It's perfect. It solves the problem of for people who complain about Interpros never having all of the top team. It solves the problem of, as you say, Andy Farrell getting his lads out for a good tough game before the Six Nations starts, presuming it does. And it solves the problem for Leinster and Munster having a good hit out before, you know, they get into deeper competition, if indeed they do.
Do you remember when they just built the Aviva, those few years when Leinster were kind of winning the European Cup? We used to always play Munster in the Aviva the week before the first rounds of the Heineken Cup.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And like us punters used to say, oh, players, that's brilliant preparation for them, and it's, you know, we'll toughen them up and give them a very hard workout before the big European Cup match. And like, as a few of those players have come to the end of their careers, it's funny how they kind of say they used to hate that. They used to hate the big Interpro the week before those matches because there was a lot of pressure. There's possibility
of that generally.
What's that?
It was their first game back. It was generally their first game back.
Yeah. But like, you know, whereas we as punters used to go, oh, this is brilliant. This is a sort of, you know, full strength Interpro going head to head. But when you have different players kind of had a different view of it.
They really had to hit. They didn't like the idea there was a huge amount of pressure because obviously it was an Interpro and it was their first game back. They had no chance to ramp up. They had to be at, you know, near enough international standard from day one. It'll be interesting to see how it works. I mean, hopefully there will be. I mean, obviously the players were all kind of focused on Europe, so they were all kind of, they all were getting putting their big game heads on for the next fortnight. So at least some of that will still be there. The only thing is, will they be left with the provinces? I mean, the most important thing is, more important than Munster, Leinster, I hate to say, but the most important thing is the Six Nations, that it goes ahead. And it could be a situation where, in order to protect the players and to convince the French, mainly, that we are actually being taking every precaution possible to make sure that they're been bubbled, etc., the players could be pulled in early. You don't know. I'm basing that on nothing. That's pure speculation. But you know, if you're given a choice between Leinster versus Munster at full strength, or a completed Six Nations program that will pay for Irish rugby for the next 12 months, I know what I choose.
Of course. Having said that, we are going to the Scarlets the following week. So what's the betting that anybody who's within an ass's roar of the Six Nations squad is not going to the Scarlets?
Oh, no.
That'll be my bet. Because it's the week before the Six Nations kicks off.
Yeah, no, there's no way. They'll certainly be in camp from then.
Mm-hmm.
Be irresponsible, like just generally irresponsible not to.
Well, absolutely, because look, the Scarlets, Wales is a very, very high incidence of COVID generally, I think. And the Scarlets have been in trouble before with European matches. And they've obviously had their own games, or their Pro 14 games called off as well. So, and obviously Leinster players are going to have to cross border to play that game, whereas the last few over Christmas have all been interpros. In fact, the last time we played in the Pro 14 outside Ireland is back before the European, it's in November sometime anyway. So, yeah, it'll be a bit of a risk to send guys. Now, the upside is that there's no more Pro 14 or European games until at least the 20th of February. So even if bad things do happen, they'll have plenty of time to isolate and, you know, recover, etc. So the Scarlets game has got to be a risk, though, if you're the coaches or if you're looking at it. Andy Farrell, like you say, even if there was no COVID, they wouldn't be let go over to Wales the week before the Six Nations.
Because, like, as we say, the Six Nations is the most important thing at this point in time. Maybe not to Leinster fans as Leinster fans, but to Leinster fans as rugby fans and fans of rugby in Ireland, it must be the most important thing, because otherwise we are totally fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like the Six Nations committee today came out and have officially cancelled postponed, the women's and the under 20s championship, but no decision yet on the men's. Like, the only thing going in favour for it, I guess, is someone like Laporte, who is kind of pushing that it goes ahead. Presumably, the FFR are in the same tricky position as all the other unions. He's obviously a very influential man in French politics and sport. So I know that under the ERC, they wanted a five-day test before the players traveled. That's been reduced to 3 days now for Six Nations. So obviously it's also far less foreign team, shall we call it. There was also talk of moving the entire tournament to France, but I don't think that's going to happen. But it might happen, who knows?
Yeah,
like we're 25 days away from it. So
the setup of women's rugby is different, because apart from England and France, the rest of the players are amateur, which means that they're in and about their community. They can't bubble the way that that the full time professionals can. So that was always going to be in trouble. Six and eight, the under 20s is the same. A lot of the players are semi pro. They're students. You know, there's various concerns there about bubbling. So those tournaments were always likely to be problematic. Six Nations it doesn't have to go ahead. I mean, there are more important things than sport, you know, but not many more. And certainly for the future of the sport, we need the money.
Yeah, we'll park international rugby and other rugby news until we just go through the other fixtures from last weekend. Okay, Just quickly run through some of the other ones. It was the Ospreys beat the Dragons 28-20. Dragons up to third position in their conference, but I think they're a good few points behind. I've written down here.
Nosebleed territory. Ospreys.
Well, the Ospreys are 22 points. Like, we're on 41, Ulster 46, so they're not going to trouble the scorers at all. Interesting result. Zebre beat Treviso in back-to-back fixtures now, yeah, which was a good result for them. They won 22-18. Zebre are fifth in their conference, and they've had three victories out of their 10 games they've played, actually ahead of Glasgow.
Treviso are chaos.
So it would appear, yeah. I see Keithley left them. And part of the thing quoted in the blurb was that they're in chaos.
Yeah. Well, Keithley left or was asked to leave, one or the other. Depends on who you believe. I never believe Italian sports clubs about anything they say anyway. So whether it's rugby or soccer. But they look chaotic. They look completely chaotic, both on and off the pitch. Keithley was a guy who could have been a significant signing for them if they'd used him right and treated him with a bit of respect, but I don't think they did. Treviso, I mean, is it too much to hope that both Italian teams would be pointing in the same direction at the same time? But no.
Yes. It's well, like a big mafia trial over there at the moment.
The other result was Cardiff beating the Scarlets, which good result, I suppose, from our point of view, insofar as one of the big games that we've got to go and win is against the Scarlets. So we don't want them in contention in their conference.
Nope.
And the final game,
you're forgetting the one thing that the Welsh games were notable for this weekend was Liam Williams politely inquiring of a referee, would it be possible to play a mixed gender sport reminiscent of rugby called touch? Referee didn't like that suggestion and suggested he go off the pitch to look up the rules forever.
Yeah.
But there was one beautiful try I saw in that game.
Yeah, there was, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Upload. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. The other game was a match on Saturday between Connacht and Munster. Munster came out winners 16-10, but could have been so different. I mean, it was a fairly dull 70 minutes of rugby until the final 10 or even 5 minutes. And Connacht had a bit of resurgence with O'Sullivan scoring in the last couple of minutes. And then they had a scrum 5 meters out and we had 13 men. We had a 2-man advantage, 13 against 15. And if you actually go back and look at that match, you'll see Kieran Marmion shaking his head, absolutely pissed off, furious with the call that came into him that they were going to take. Because you have to go open. You've got an overlap. Immediately go. If Munster had have picked something that they said, okay, how are we going to, what's the best way that we can defend this? You go blind, you go in, you suck up the space. And I don't know whether it was Carty or whether it was the captain, the number 8, that were giving them, saying we're going to take the ball on, but just the wrong call. Crazy stuff.
It was there on a play. They did all the hard work. They sucked in the Munster defenders. All they had to do was flash it out. Like, if James and Gibson Park had been on the back of those rooks, he would have flashed the ball out to a winger somewhere who would have just fallen over the line. Because, you know, they couldn't have covered all the bases out there with the lack of... It was two backs that were down, I think, wasn't it?
Somebody should have tell Connick the kickoff before actual kickoff.
Yeah.
Because they always come strong at the end. This way, they come strong in the middle.
As you know from previous, I have nothing against Munster, but you know, Connacht are everybody's second favorite team in Ireland. If you're not already a Connacht fan, and they're your first favorite team, so you know, I was.
Sorry, just to clarify, who is your second? Is it Scarlets, Cardiff, or now Connacht? But like, I'd imagine that Andy Friend must have been absolutely furious with them after that. And that's not the first time this year that they've made monumental cock up in the last minute. remember against Bristol, they had an opportunity to get a losing bonus point that possibly would have, and we'll get to the European Cup now, but by having that losing bonus point, might have got them qualified for the
Challenge Cup.
And as it's structured now in the Champions League, we don't know what's going to happen, but one proposal is that first place play of Pool A would play eighth place in Pool B, and so on. And it could have been Connacht if they had taken that losing bonus. I don't, maybe it mightn't have been because they hadn't, they'd already lost against Racing, but still, just it just seems that if, you know, in those championship minutes, how we call them, they don't seem to have a clear head, just probably when you do need them.
Well, just to clarify, Jason, on my second favourite team, Connacht have always been my second favourite team. No Welsh team have ever been my second favourite team. About 4 years ago, I once said that Cardiff were going to have a good season, and and they had a shit season, and I've been getting it in the neck ever since.
You're explaining you're losing.
If I was going to support a Welsh team, it would be the Ospreys. So there you go. Nail my colours to the mast.
Just as sort of another point, we're talking about the Munster game. I see Glasgow have signed Duncan Weir from the Worcester Warriors.
So have they?
It seems to be on a long-term deal. So it might put to bed the Ben Healy to Glasgow.
You can really only have one curly ginge in a team at the same time.
Well, now you have to admire Duncan's afro that he's growing out at the moment. It's quite spectacular.
Yeah, good man, Dunkey. What was it they used to call him? The meatball or something like that?
He's grown his hair out for some charity or other. I can't remember what it is, but, you know, fair play to him.
Yeah.
He has his place. He's, you know, you wouldn't pick him over many out halves in world rugby, but he wouldn't let you down. He's a good nuggety little player. He's good at what he does.
Yeah.
He forced his way back into the Scottish team when they had their injuries in those autumn internationals. Mm-hmm. One other little bit was I saw Carl Sinclair got 2-match banned for swearing at the referee.
Bad day, bad weekend for referees between Kyle Sinclair, Liam Williams, and your man in France.
Well, that's hilarious, wasn't it, when he was lifted up for the line out?
Yeah, he didn't like that at all.
Do you remember about 20 years ago, the referee dropped his cards? Gazza was playing for Rangers at the time. Yeah. I can't remember who Rangers were playing. And the referee dropped his set of cards, and instead of Gazza picked them up, but instead of handing them back to them, he flashed the yellow or a red at the referee. But the referee booked him. You know, talk about having no sympathy and
sense of the crime.
Like, I think that was, I think what your man did was worse, because he laid his hands on the referee. But I don't know, seems a bit harsh giving him a red card for that, I would say.
Yeah.
Your two options are to get angry or laugh it off, and laugh it off is always going to be the best option.
I know, but we're trying, rugby is, I think, fighting and losing its fight to try and gain new viewers, new
markets,
new fans to the game, and having this kind of, I don't know, lack of fun attitude is quite negative. You know, it's not going to win over somebody to the match, and the referee can't even have a laugh. I mean, it was the end of the game. You lifted him up, like, I mean, a bit of a ticking off for sure, but maybe you're in the tunnel.
Yeah,
I think the red card was seriously overkill.
Yeah,
buzzkill. Never mind overkill.
Yeah, but like, I mean, we've got a bit of time. We don't have any rugby fixtures really to talk about. But I noticed that, say, Nickelodeon have now started to show NFL games, and they
what are you
have,
doing watching Nickelodeon, Jay?
No, but I was actually listening to an NFL podcast, and they were talking about.
Oh, you're looking for. You were watching that show with Ariana Grande in it, weren't you? You were. You jerk.
You're explaining you're losing, Jason.
Yeah. So Nickelodeon have decided to show the games, but it's obviously aimed at a younger audience. So when there's a touchdown, they've got a little animation comes up.
And I saw that.
Kind of foam slime or whatever. Slime pit. You know, there's little, you know, asking the players questions. Oh, what's it like to be tackled? This one guy says, oh, it's like falling down a set of wooden stairs. You know, but kind of obviously aimed at that younger audience to try and get new fans in. Whereas we're so po-faced in rugby that it's, you know, it would be, I just remember like when rugby started, when say Leinster started taking off, Dave, you know, if someone started actually applauding and cheering in Donnybrook, it was, you know, people were looking down their spectacles at them saying, how dare they?
Do you remember?
Raise their voice and cheer for Leinster.
Do you remember the short-lived experiment when players got sin-binned? When Leinster played sha-na-na-na-na-na-na-na over the PA. And I swear to God, it was like the storming of the Capitol building the other week. The outrage. The outrage. Now, that wouldn't be my cup of tea, that thing per se. But people went ballistic, absolutely ballistic for, you know, because it was it wasn't in keeping with the traditions of the game.
Yeah,
well, I know.
And you
I
see as well, you see as well, people complaining about, say, for example, Leinster use that song by Rihanna as the run-out music now. And, oh, the upset. The upset.
It's actually not bad, in my
it
opinion.
Is what it is. I mean, players
that,
like it.
That's though. Actually for the players. It's not for the fans. That song is actually...
Personally, it's, I mean, as a music fan, I prefer other songs, but I literally don't care.
Yeah.
I was going to say to you, I know, I'm sure we all know plenty of those guys that are still, some of them are still that old school. I might clap politely now and again, but shout? Oh my God. I remember sitting at the Heineken Cup final in 2011, and there's a guy who's actually a customer of mine as well, who was sitting just off to my left, a bit behind me. And for the whole, now, you know what that game was, Northampton and Leinster? He didn't open his mouth once. He did clap. Now, this guy is a huge rugby fan. Huge. And if you get talking to him, he'd be talking under the table about rugby. Mm. Very knowledgeable chap. Been supporting and playing rugby probably since the early 60s. But wouldn't ever open his mouth and say, come on, Leinster, or anything. And like, fine. It is that traditionalist streak in rugby that is probably killing it in another way, you know.
I think because the three of us have all been, I mean, I know the two of you guys went to Soggy Biscuit schools, but the three of us all played like metropolitan or provincial rugby, or played against provincial clubs, where it's a different kind of game. It's not as po-faced, it's a bit more earthy. Whereas there is a very traditionalist core to rugby, certainly in Leinster, specifically in Dublin.
But you'd wonder how much change. Of that. But like, put it this way, say, start going to watch Leinster play on a fairly consistent basis, somewhere between 20 and 15 years ago, right? So the po-faced people might have been in their 50s 20 years ago, right? So those lads are in their 70s now. But the people who are now in their 40s or 50s were quite young when rugby went pro. So they were quite open-minded. Like if you think when rugby went pro 25 years ago, you know, Saracens, certainly the South African teams, maybe some of the Australian teams used to bring on the kick and tee with little motorized things, little remote control cars. I'm not saying that they should go back to having cheerleaders, but you know, some of the South African teams do still have them. They have bands, certainly in France, makes a fantastic atmosphere having those.
Back in the day, do you remember that?
Yeah, I was like, I don't think you get away with that in these times, but I mean,
naked women and everything.
You helped. You helped Ciara Kennedy organize a Basque style brass band, if you recall, Jason, back in Donnybrook. Do you remember that?
I did.
And there was what could only be described as an avalanche of complaints about, you know, the raucousness and the rowdiness of it, and basically the NIMBYism of it. And then 2 weeks later, people would be complaining about there being no atmosphere in Donnybrook, you know.
Yeah,
I don't think you're ever going to win, but like that was, you know, that was pre-moving to the RDS.
Yeah.
People might be a little bit more open or conducive to having, you know, a bit more, shall we say, razzmatazz. I mean, it wasn't, I don't know, many years ago, it was maybe 10 years ago that they had that guy that used to play the guitar in his jocks in...
The Naked Cowboy.
Naked Cowboy in Manhattan. He was brought over for halftime entertainment, and I'd say he was, you know, obviously appreciated by 51% of the audience, I'd imagine. Yeah, but like, you know, I think rugby can be a little bit po-facing. You know, like that we don't really embrace change that well. And, you know, let's face it, we're in an uphill battle to try and win hearts and minds. Even if you look at some of the rugby clubs in Dublin that are struggling to fill third teams when, you know, GA clubs can literally have 50 teams to pick from. Especially even some newer clubs. I mean, Coola wouldn't be a very old team, maybe only, I don't know, 15 years old. And they've kind of eaten the lunch of a lot of, you know, they're from a fairly well-heeled part of the city that rugby might be, you know, fairly, like, and a lot of people play boat sports and have an interest in boat sports. But, you know, to get participating numbers, certainly the GAA clubs are doing a far better job than the rugby clubs are.
Yeah, absolutely. GAA are far, far better at getting people in through the door. Not, I don't mean through the gates in terms of gates, but just getting people involved in the club and on the ground. I mean, you and I, Jason, both live in where we live, Castleknock GAA Club, are just an absolute behemoth. Just in terms of, you know, their ground game, as they call it in colonial rugby, is just unbelievable. There is almost a dichotomy between, you know, participation levels which are falling necessarily at the moment, but, you know, in general. But the TV viewing numbers, I don't know if you saw the most watched sporting events of 2020. Obviously the All-Ireland finals were up there. But then there was almost nearly every Ireland game before you got to a soccer international. And that was a playoff match, and it was an important match. So there's still an appetite out there to watch, certainly the Irish team. It's hard to know what the appetite is like for the provincial teams because they're on pay-per-view and you don't get numbers. But the appetite is certainly there to watch live professional rugby. It's just a matter of tapping into it. Because of the huge numbers that watch all those games, if you even get 1% in the door, that's an extra, you know, couple of hundred people in for your gate. And that's that's a big difference if they're each paying 30 quid, you know.
100%. Like, I'll give you an example. I'm involved with Kuma, and we've basically set up a girls section in the club. You know, we were,
I thought that was about 3 years, 15.
What was that? Sorry?
I thought the girls' section was numbers 9 through 15.
Well, some might say that. So anyway, we sat and we were literally getting either between 9 and 15 girls turning up for training on a Saturday. And we said, well, look, you know, we're banging our head against the wall here. So we can either call it or do something a little bit different. So we kind of canvassed and did a little bit of research to see what days other sports and other clubs weren't training. And we found there was a little hole in the market that Monday nights was no GA, was no scouts, was no soccer, you know. So maybe we'll go down and have training, move from Saturday afternoon to train on a Monday at 7. And Dave, you know, we got a lot of help from the Leinster branch, a huge amount of help from the Leinster branch, but we're getting 120 kids down training now. And a lot of them arrive, you know, in their local GAA jerseys because they don't have a rugby jersey. It's just a sports jersey to them. And they come down and run around in their GAA. And, you know, look, We don't know how many of them are going to go on and play for Ireland, but it's just about giving kids an opportunity to play sports, especially girls, because a lot of them don't play sports, don't continue on playing sports. But like, if they have an opportunity, of course, brings numbers down to the club, and who knows, in a few years' time, we might have interprovincials or internationals coming from the crop of girls that are currently down for a play if they do. But I have to say that Leinster have been fantastic in a support for us. Getting in, like, we had Lindsay Pete.
You've got some of the top players down there, haven't you, Jay?
We do. We had Lindsay Pete down just before Christmas. Oh, and a wonderful person. So natural with the kids, was spot on. She was great. And but like Leinster have been really, really, and especially with the whole, 20 for 20 kind of initiative to get girls to play sports. It was lucky, kind of dovetailed into that. So, you know, but like what I'm saying is, I suppose, you know, clubs can do is, particularly when you've got Coolmine, because it's got a huge catchment area it has certainly other sports that can rival it, but it doesn't have another rugby club. Westminster Town is probably the nearest rugby club, so there's not many others in the area. So you kind of we have a very big catchment area, and I suppose then you've got traditionally you've got Castleknock College, so you've got boys in the area that
come out of that.
You know, when they finish school and they want to play, they can come back and play Coolmine. But I suppose I've kind of off topic. I went off topic there, but we touched on viewing figures and TV, and I was just interested to read, and I was very interested to see that there could be a deal done with the Six Nations for CVC. They're talking about 400 million for about 15% for 5 years. So that's a lot of bread. I think we probably all have a similar outlook and view that we might be selling our soul, but at the moment we might need that dosh.
Yeah, at the moment our soul is
better. Better to sell your soul than be dead.
Yeah. There are one or two flies in the ointment. Well, not flies in the ointment, but the government still haven't announced their protected events for the new protected list. If they put Six Nations on it, it'll reduce the value of the overall TV contract, because one of the areas that does have a huge take up of subscriber TV is Ireland. So if rugby isn't on that, if the Irish home games are protected and have to be on free to view, then there could be an issue around that, which might affect CVC's valuation.
One of the proposals about it was that
no more than three of your games,
but the home games might be kind of given. So for instance, let's say in Ireland, it'll be on say Virgin or RTE. But if we play in France, that match then might be on Sky or Amazon or whatever.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know how they're going to work it, but it certainly CVC seem to be dipping their toe big time into the rugby market.
Look, I've never been comfortable with CVC's involvement.
No, I know that. I think a lot of people aren't.
But at this particular point in time, for the continued existence of the game as a professional entity, just going to have to hold our breath and swallow.
Yeah, indeed. That hasn't been announced. There was only kind of a bit of rumours about that in the last couple of days. One thing that was announced in the last week since we last spoke was Paul O'Connell coming into the Ireland setup as forwards coach, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think Simon Easterby has moved to defence, whereas before he was kind of double jobbing. I'm not sure you can double job at international level. I do know there has been some concern mentioned sotto voce by some of the more reliable journalists, not necessarily the muckrakers, that the IRFU are a bit concerned about the size and cost of the coaching team. That it seems to be expanding exponentially every time they turn their back on it.
Really?
And is that for the Irish team?
For the Irish national team, that the IRFU are, that was we say a week or 10 days ago. I think it was mentioned kind of not as a main thing, but it was mentioned by Fanning and by Peter O'Reilly, who are kind of good journalists. And then less than a week later, there's a new coach appointed, an additional coach appointed. So who knows? But it's
who's the additional coach?
Paul O'Connell.
You know, I know that, but who else has been?
No, Paul. Like, who's that's this? The guy I was talking about. So he's the guy who came in addition. Simon Easterby was doing two jobs, if you like, and now they brought in Paul to do one of them.
I know, but like for those two journalists, they're talking about who there's an ever expanding list of coaches.
Oh yeah,
I'm just wondering, like, what new coaches are there? Like, you know, Farrell was there when Smith. Yeah. So Smith's gone, so Farrell's replaced him. So he's brought in Mike Cash, but that kind of might. So you know, you've still got Simon Easterby, and I'm just thinking, like, is there a whole load of new coaches come in?
No. There was in advance of the O'Connell appointment, and that there was talk that there was going to be an appointment made, but the IRFU weren't happy about having to hire new coaches because the coaching team seemed to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger. There's been some backroom guys as well, I mean, involved. They brought in a new mental skills coach and stuff like that, or a new team psychologist, whatever you want to call it. But then, no, like a week later, the job is done. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think at that level, I think that once you reach full-time professional level, each of those sectors need a full-time guy of their own. Unless you've got some guy who's just like a complete nutter rugby savant, like Joe Smith, you can't really do two jobs at once.
Yeah,
it's good to get someone like Paul O'Connell in. Anyway, yeah. I know his coaching career hasn't been stellar this far, but, you know, he's early in his coaching career is one thing, but the other thing is it's bringing in another head into the mix. You know, Simon Easterby has been the forwards coach since Jesus was in short pants. And, you know, it's good to get a new voice in there. And obviously a voice that everyone is going to respect, you know, big time. There isn't a player in that team that isn't going to stop and listen when Paul O'Connell opens his gob. So, you know, it's a positive thing to have an extra guy. Because before that, basically you swapped Joe Schmidt for Mike Catt. Not the most inspiring bit of recruitment, you know. I'm not knocking Mike Catt, but I'm just saying that it's like trying to go on stage after the Beatles. You know, it's not an easy job to fill Joe Schmidt's shoes. So the more people you have, more voices that people respect that you have, the better. And getting it could be good for O'Connell and it could be good for Ireland too.
I mean, there hasn't been a huge turnover of forwards.
Fogarty came in, didn't he? Fogarty came in for Feek as well.
Yeah,
that was more of a scrummaging thing. But I mean, just to say, we've had what three head coaches in the last 10 years, and we've had four forwards coaches, but two of them are still in the organization, in O'Connell and Easterby. So there hasn't been a massive. It's not like we're changing them every 6 weeks, you know. And one of them kind of left quite early in his tenure. We wanted him to stay on, if you remember, John Plumtree.
Plumtree, yeah.
Yeah, we wanted him to stay on, but he wanted to do other things. So you'd Plumtree, Gert Small, and Simon Easterby. That's not a huge turnover of guys. And Easterby is still in the organisation, so.
Yeah, and that's gone back 12 years to the Grand Slam, you know. Yeah.
It's not excessive.
No. No, absolutely. No, I'm saying the opposite. In fact, I'm saying Easterby's been there such a long time. Mm. However, you know, John Fogarty, while he was new to the Ireland setup, he'd been in Leinster since he stopped playing, basically. So in the same way as Joe Schmidt came from Leinster to Ireland, and any Leinster players were therefore listening to Joe Schmidt for 9 years, you know. The same with John Fogarty and the forwards, they're listening to his scrummaging methods for whatever. And a lot of the forwards are Leinster, in fairness. A huge amount of the packet, back in the day in the 90s, it was the exact opposite. It was all, the pack was all Munster and the backs were all Leinster. It's you know, the pack is nearly all Leinster now, you know. So to have somebody coming in from outside, that I know he's not from outside Irish rugby, but from outside the bubble that they've all been in, is a good thing, you know. Yeah, if you could get another guy maybe from outside Irish rugby for some other job that's coming up, then that'll be good too.
Yeah. Well, there's been another couple of announcements actually today. The under-20s coach has also been, a new coach has been appointed. Kieran Campbell from the Ulster Academy has come in. Dennis Leamy is going to help him out, I think, in the defensive coaching role. So there's kind of a couple, you know, additional appointees that have been internal. Promotions, I guess. Yeah.
And McNamara's gone back to Leinster. Who's done a brilliant job. I mean, he's been there 2 years. They won a Grand Slam and would have won a second one, only for COVID. So, you know, that's a guy with a serious pedigree. Kieran Campbell, I mean, people have been critical of Ulster's production line, but actually Ulster turned out a lot of young players, mostly backs. The problem is that they've turned out an awful lot of really good backs, international class backs, not so many forwards, but I think that's more a function of the game in Ulster than anything else. I mean, the criticism of Campbell, I don't think is really that valid. By the time they get to him, you know, that he can't just pull forwards out of thin air. If all he can work with is backs, and he's turned them, most of them went on to play for Ireland. Nearly all of them have played for Ireland at some stage. He seems to have done a decent job with them.
And there's still a steady stream as well. James Hume, McIlroy,
Lowry,
disgraced minister in the Free State, Michael Lowry. You've got a clatter of them. Only Henderson, but Alicoon, there's another guy who's been out for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, a few forwards would be nice. Put that on the list.
I guess we'll see a bit of that talent on Friday, when Leinster A take on Ulster A. So we'll see a few of his, no doubt, his graduates.
Recent charges.
Recent charges, exactly, in that game.
Yes, streamed live on the BBC Northern Ireland Sport website.
Indeed. Might tune into that. What time is it on?
I think it's a 3.
I don't know. Apparently they can't block viewers from the Republic of Ireland because that would involve the website setting a flag. And you know how they feel about flags up in Northern Ireland?
Yes, it'll be streamed to everywhere in the world, apparently, from BBC Northern Ireland. So there you go.
I really didn't know that.
Yeah. There was no geo-blocking at all on it, apparently.
Yeah. It'll be on, it's on iPlayer, but that's geo-locked to the UK. But it'll be on the BBC Northern Ireland website as well, and that's not.
Indeed. Mm.
Well, boys, I think that's pretty much it. I mean, I don't think we've got much else rugby to cover, unless you have anything.
No. I mean, there are things happening around, you know, the Rainbow Cup and the Lions Tour, but in the absence of any actual news, all we'd be doing is speculating. We kind of did that last week. So, you know, until we get some actual hard news on those two subjects, I mean, there's not much else we can say to our dear viewer.
I know. Well, I mean, the only thing was just that I kind of touched on it was the Champions League, and we don't really know. There's been a couple of proposals. Mm. One is that they just take the... I think they're going to... There's one proposal, which they play one more round of matches and go straight into semi-finals.
No.
So just the top two. I don't know whether that will fly. There's another one that they're saying is going to be, you know, position A in Pool A. Would play position eight and pool B and so
have
on.
A round of 16 before going to quarters. 16.
Yeah. Because they have a few weekends to play with insofar as they've got, obviously these two weekends are gone, but they have two quarterfinals there. So they maybe just get rid of one of those quarterfinals, have it as a...
The problem is that that those weekends could come under pressure from the Premiership and the top 14 to fill cancellations that have already happened.
We shall see what happens. We don't know, and who knows what's going to happen with the Lions Tour.
At the moment, all we can say with any certainty Actually, no, we can't even say. I was going to say, all we can say with any certainty is that Ulster A will be playing Leinster A this weekend, and Munster will be playing Leinster next weekend. But we can't even say that with any certainty, because God only knows what's going to happen.
Well, on that note, I think we'll say good night. So, anyway, boys, thanks very much for watching. Thanks very much, John and Dave. If you are following us on Facebook or Twitter, please give us a like and a subscribe. Thanks again. Cheers.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.